Resident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff. On this July the 15th on the West Coast, now July 16th on the East Coast of the United States of America. So nice to have you with us. We have a great show planned for you this evening, a great guest. Before we bring him on, I just want to mention I've been trying to follow this debacle that's going on in Pasadena, California with IndyMac. This is a bank now that is experiencing a run. People are trying to get their money. The bank has failed. The federal government has moved in to guarantee loans. They say the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation is going to guarantee accounts up to $100,000. Of course, they tell us that. What happens when we find out all the money's gone and that the insurance companies have put it in overseas accounts, offshore accounts, and they cannot retrieve the funds because they cannot show source of funds? This is a problem we're having in the derivatives and hedge fund market. Mark my words now, I've been telling you about this for 2 years, and it's been little, if at all, reported in the mainstream media, and now it's happening. And I'm hearing about people standing in line from 11 o'clock at night into well into the evening of the next day, being told that they're not on the list to go in and get their money. This is absolutely disgusting, it's insane, and we need to take back our country. Of course, the bankers are running things the way they want to run them. We don't have to play their game. We can create something new. We can create new opportunities for ourselves if we just use our minds and listen to our hearts. And with that, I want to introduce tonight's guest. He is an attorney, very accomplished attorney, both in civil rights, we could say constitutional law. Also, he is an antitrust attorney. That means he fights for the little guy. That's you and that's me. And I would like to welcome him back to Evident Footprints for his second interview. This is Mr. Carl Pearson. Carl, how are you this evening?
Hi, fine, Don. Thank you very much. And I also am one of the little guys.
You are? Okay.
Oh, absolutely. I have the smallest law firm in the country.
You do?
Yo, it's just me. It makes it easier to fight. If you have an overhead and you have to worry about paying the bills and you wonder if you say something you're going to lose clients that are paying you huge sums of money, it makes it difficult to do anything but just get along and do what the others want. But when you're small, you have a very limited overhead, you can really go out there and do the things that you know need to be done, and that's what I'm trying to do.
Well, the last time you were on the show, Carl, we spoke about some ideas that you had, some of the many, many websites that you have, which are, from what I have been able to see, and I've not gone down the rabbit hole on all the things that you're doing, I have to be honest with you. You know I'm working on some major articles for the Idaho Observer on this Three Stooges Go to Washington serial piece that I'm doing. And so I am investing quite a bit of my time in writing and researching. But I've taken breaks and gone over to your site and looked at how you've set up the MyClad site, which is the free classified advertising website that you set up to bring people together, to give everyone across the country the opportunity to not just advertise who they are and what they do, but to interface with other people that may require their services. And I think it's a wonderful idea. I wanted you to talk a little bit about that. as well as anything else that's on your mind. I know you've been wanting to address some of the problems that we have, and we are a solution-oriented show as well. And whenever we can offer solutions to the listening audience, by all means, that's what we would like to do.
Well, I have, for example, as you indicated, MyClads, M-Y-C-L-A-D-S. It means myclassifiedads.com. And the idea behind that is that employers really seem at this point to no longer want to hire people. They're doing as much as they can in many cases to get rid of people. They're giving them less in salaries, less in benefits. They're transferring jobs to overseas, outsourcing. They're selling jobs to other communities, moving them out and leaving communities in the lurch. And why is it that people are dependent upon a corporation, a major corporation, to provide a way of earning a living? Why can't we do this for ourselves? And that led me into creation of the website myclads.com.
Well, I can tell you from personal experience, Carl, I've pretty much worked for myself my whole life, being a freelance musician and a composer, basically everything to do with music production. I know what it's like not to have to punch in a time card and sit in on meetings that really have nothing to do with what I do, which is the experience out there in the real world. And there are many, many talented people across the country who would work if they could make a decent living and at least what they're worth. You know, what would you pay a plumber, a master plumber, who is has been one for 30 years, and he's maybe 10 or 15 years short of retiring? You might pay this individual $25 or $30 an hour working on a legitimate job. And that's not even reflecting what his experience is. And today, these big projects go in there with these gigantic contractors, and they hire out more gigantic companies that go in there and knock this out with machinery, and they're cutting costs because of the speed at which they can do all this work, and probably even inferior products. And there are people, regular people out there, that are quite competent and can do good work. I've seen building inspectors examine buildings being rehabbed, and they were questioning what, like a master plumber was doing. What's that pipe bent like that for? What's that brace there? And the guy says, that's the correct way to do it. And the guy says, I've never seen that done before. Why are you doing that now? It's not necessary. And he said, it's necessary according to the quality of work I do. It's and the liability that I incur if something goes wrong. That's the only way to do it, the right way. And this guy told me he had never seen anything like this particular building inspector before. But these are the types of problems that we're facing when we have dishonest people working in the government, and we're putting people out of work because favoritism is being played in favor of the good old boys, the guys that will give the kickbacks. So you're offering us a multifaceted solution. You want to make any comment on anything I just said?
Here's the idea. We may have 100 million people on the average in the United States who have about 2,000 hours available per year for which they're not doing anything economically. That seems to be, I think, 200 billion hours that are going wasted. Now, that's a lot of inventory to have for a single website, 200 billion hours of unused time that people are trying to sell things that they would like to do. So what I'm saying is that people can go on this website and list the different things that they would like to do. They might, for example, want to repair carburetors. or a specific kind of carburetor, or they might know a program for running an election in a given state and say that I'm available to any candidate to help them comply with the campaign financing laws. There's millions of different things that we could be doing, and we only have to list those things that we would like to do and where we believe that others would want to hire us if they only knew that we would be willing to do that. So we should list, each of us, 100 or 1,000 different things that we do or would like to do, and the website allows you to do that very quickly because you can make any one listing in about 2 seconds. Just type in two words, for example, mow lawns, campaign financing software, New York. I mean, you just put in a few words, hit a button, and then you have another ad. It automatically picks up your name and your picture and allows you to put in a website address where you further elaborate upon that particular ad that you have. So people that want to find somebody to do a service or to sell goods or do anything have a choice of a zip code radius of up to 50 miles from around their own location in order to find somebody, for example, who mows lawns or repairs carburetors, so that you're not really, in many cases, competing with the world. You're only competing in a little radius of 50 miles, so that anyone that puts in hundreds of ads will find that there are people within that same area who would want to hire them. And this is a free service. The ads last forever. You have as many ads as you want, even if they duplicate each other. And you take the ads off when you're tired of getting responses. I don't take the ads off. You take them off. So that this is a way where we can define ourselves economically for the next 50 years by putting on ads and trying to get results, looking into new areas, defining what you would like to do, and having people find you through this website. There's no fee on our part. And I think this is a new way of breaking down employment, rather than having Walmart tell you that you have to stand by that door 8 hours a day and greet people. We have another way by which we can break down our services. And I think this is a tremendous asset for any community, for the people to put their names in there, to list what they do, and the surrounding area of 50 miles can find them, hire them. And they, too, are going to say, hey, wait a minute, why are we only hiring people from that one town? I think I'm going to put my name in the database, and you're going to see it spread throughout the country. That's my prediction.
Now, is there any tracking of, let's say, making sure someone is a, let's say, a valid citizen?
I haven't built that in. I know what you're saying. Have I created elaborate systems to allow the government to come in and determine whether you and your ad are kosher, for example? And the answer is no. We've got to have a streamlined system and allow people to run ads as they do already on eBay, as they do, as they run websites. It pretty much means that if you find somebody that says that they can write a website, it's up to you to determine really for yourself whether that person is telling you the truth. I can only have a website that puts people in touch with each other, but I can't guarantee that somebody is what he or she purports to be, or that the buyer, in fact, has any money and is willing to pay. I can't do that. It just creates an overhead and a cumbersome system that prevents the flow of information.
Yeah, well, I'm sort of rhetorically asking that question for the listening audience, of course, because they'll come up with all kinds of questions. So
well,
I have to do the thinking for them.
you can have a system of people dissatisfied registering that, but the site is new, and I need to get people to be using the site before I can have an elaborate system of checks and balances. I've got to see how it works out. interestingly enough, I have a meeting on Friday, upstate New York, and I'm going to meet with the town and meet for the purpose of possibly being appointed as the town attorney general for that town. And as part of that, I'm going to try to see if the town will participate in allowing a campaign to try to get as many people to register with that website as possible as a way of bringing money into the town. Towns all over the country need money, and I think this website is a way by which individuals and small businesses in the town can offer their services at no cost. It's just a little bit of work to try to put your what you want to do on the website. But in this way, you can have, hopefully, hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands of dollars being earned by individuals per year, more than they're getting right now. It's a way of making the economy work once again, bypassing the monopolies and going down to basics and saying, hey, I clean cars. Would you like to hire me? Hey, I tutor in thermodynamics. Can your son or daughter use some tutoring? There's a million different things. There's really far more than a million. There's probably at least 100 million different things that people could offer. And you and I only want maybe 1,000 or 100 of these things. But it's a marketplace that's crying out to be created. And it's going to allow us to employ those 200 billion unsold hours per year that can remake the country. We have a way of putting ourselves back to work constructively at the right price and also in furtherance of our democratic ideals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the concept, you know, what keeps coming back to me, or I keep recalling, is your intention to localize these movements for a multiplicity of reasons, not just for creating employment, but for rebuilding the country from the bottom up. It's quite obvious that when people are repressed at the bottom, and merely because of something as simple as making contact with other people, getting the word out that they have a product or a service that they offer and that they can provide on a regular basis in a competent manner, it's sad that these things are being repressed by these corporate monsters. You know, we like to call them monopolies, but they're really monsters. They feed off the little guy until there's nothing more to feed off. And I wonder where they think their market is going to be eventually.
Well, they're moving it. They're moving it to other countries. Once they've stolen the market from us and when we're heading towards second world status, they're moving elsewhere and they're selling their goods elsewhere. Companies that we think of as American really are no longer American. They have far more than 50% of their sales and their profits from outside of America. They don't owe their allegiance to us, but they control us.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, they're going to do the same thing where they are, too.
Oh, absolutely. They rape anywhere. I mean, that's what their job is, 24 hours of stealing everything they can get. And we have to react to that by creating systems that allow us to survive in a world where the money and the power is dominated by the huge corporations that last forever. They don't die. I mean, they if they go into bankruptcy, it's really because somebody else acquires their assets. It's the dead hand of the church or the corporation, the more main that we have, that it becomes worse and worse, and it's a paralysis to our economy. It's good for them, but bad for us. But no one says that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I was thinking earlier today when I heard about this bank collapsing in Pasadena. Actually, the announcement came out on Sunday afternoon. Tell me that wasn't planned.
Uh-huh.
I mean, what bank is in a position to announce that it's insolvent and that the federal government has to move in there and take over. Well, it fits into the New World Order plans of federalizing everything, and the UN is involved, as you know, and these multinational corporations that are being swallowed up by the Carlyle Group and Halliburton, and no one stops to think that when you take all the jobs out of the country and you oppress the people, I wonder to what extent the bankers think of this, and the people don't have any money. They're not going to be putting any more money in your bank. How do they expect the bank to survive?
Let me explain the problem as I see it, because I've been around for a long time, and the analysis, the realization of what's going on took quite a while for me to figure out. But it's similar to, let's say, have you ever seen anyone selling bootleg DVDs on the sidewalk?
Oh, yes, yes.
Okay, now, why would anyone buy those things?
Well, probably because they have some expendable cash, and they don't make wise decisions about the nature of it, and particularly how it might be packaged or what it might contain may be the lure.
Right. For $4, they can get a movie which otherwise they'd have to pay $20 or $25 sometimes to get.
Exactly.
So people will do that. Now, why would you or I possibly buy that ourselves, knowing that it's illegal for us to buy it, it's illegal for them to sell it? Why do we do it?
Well, I don't. I don't know about you.
Well, many people buy, and the reason that they do is that we have no law enforcement. No one's stopping them.
Mm-hmm.
No one is stopping that sale. If we don't have enforcement of law, you're going to find that the people will violate the law and create usurious fees and charges because there is no one enforcing the law. We used to have state law preventing usury. And then the government, when Bush 2 was elected, passed the first statute of the Bush 2 administration that said that we are preempting all state usury laws so that credit card companies and banks can now charge anything they want without any fear. There's no lawsuits for usury any longer. So what we did is we created a lawlessness, which the law is now that they can charge anything, even though the law prior to that time was that you have restrictions, you have usury. We had that for hundreds of years, and now we don't have it. So, but basically what I see is that we have nobody in the government enforcing the laws that we had on the books for a good many years.
And that's because they're breaking them.
Yeah, and they're not only not enforcing them, but they're actively breaking them. So my concept was, wouldn't it be interesting if one person called a town attorney general could really become the same as the SEC, the FTC, the Justice Department, the Attorney General, the Department of Consumer Affairs, the EEOC, all in one, at the local level, where somebody living in that town can walk into the office and say, hey, I've got a problem, and others in town have a problem. Oh, yeah, well, tell me about it. Then there are 40,000 towns, villages, and counties in the United States, 40,000. Imagine having 40,000 antitrust civil rights lawyers scattered around these towns, available to the public with taxpayer money to provide the funding so that we can start enforcing the laws that our elected officials are not enforcing any longer.
Yeah, that's a great idea. And I would throw in there repealing the laws that are in violation of the original Constitution or any other law.
Right, but here was my problem that I dealt with. In too many cases, we have people saying that if we could only pass a constitutional amendment, if we could only pass a law, what I have done is I've designed a system that we can implement without that. You don't need to pass any laws according to what I want to do.
Yeah, I'm not suggesting we create new laws. I'm just saying, you know, you and I spoke about this the last time you were on the show. We've got, what, some 23 million laws, and they're just, it's just paper pushing is all it is, pencil and paper pushing.
Now take a small town anywhere in the country. If you have a town attorney general for that town, that person, male or female, can bring a lawsuit against people who owe money to the town, people who have ripped off the town. And there's so many different bases for bringing suit, but the towns generally don't do it because it's at a higher level of legal work than they normally handle. Town attorneys generally handle slip and fall cases and zoning problems and things like that. But in Wall Street, we handle securities matters, antitrust matters. We have bigger problems, more expensive problems involving financing and banks and stuff like that. And there's a lot of money that can be made, as former Attorney General Spitzer showed, that he took in $3 billion a year in bringing lawsuits against just a few people in the financial world. $3 billion a year. If you bring that down to the level of a small town, you can probably bring in, say, $10 or $20 million in settlements or judgments for a town with only 2,500 or 5,000 families. That's a lot of money to add to the town's revenues. And you could use that money to pay for health care. You could reduce real estate taxes, reduce rent, provide free dental care, and also give free broadband service. So that's what I think the town attorney general should do. He or she should be out there collecting the money that was stolen from the members of the town and having the town's political leadership use that money to benefit the town.
Yeah, there's a lot of work there, obviously, because it's been going on for so long.
They're only lawsuits, that's all.
Yeah.
It's not work, it's just a lawsuit. But the towns don't have that quality of legal work. They have slip and fall cases, they have zoning, licensing bars, licensing restaurants, giving fire inspections. I mean, they have a lot of administrative duties and violations and parking tickets and stuff, but they don't actively try to enforce the laws that the public needs to have enforced for their economic well-being. They think the federal government's going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
We know that the federal government runs away from that. That because of the lack of enforcement of law, we've had companies get larger and larger and larger until they no longer are subject to the laws of the United States. They become a government unto themselves with their own armies, for God's sake. They have private armies.
Yeah. Here's a question for you, Carl. Do you envision the local attorney general being an advocate for a citizen that is undergoing, and it could be the whole community, undergoing undue targeting by the system? You know, let's say you've got police departments that are meeting quotas every month because they've got to keep so much money coming into the court, and so you have a lot of arrests being made or tickets being issued, and it ends up being a plea bargain type of situation just to guarantee that they get some money in. Now, you know, I'm talking about abuse under color of authority.
I've been all over that, over my history in litigation. I've been up to the U.S. Supreme Court on parking tickets. I had the biggest publicity of my life when I brought suit to invalidate the New York City parking tickets. I had at least 50 to 100 media outside the courtroom pushing microphones in my face and cameras and all that. Finally, the judge had me go inside, and then we started the trial to invalidate all parking tickets in New York City. and in walked two people. I said, Your Honor, those two people right there, they're the ones that are doing it. They walked up, and they served papers on the judge, and they sued the judge right in my courtroom. They brought suit against the judge and enjoined him from continuing my trial. And they said the reason was that everyone has stopped paying the tickets, and they're losing $100 million every week or month. They brought suit against my judge. I ultimately lost that case. The higher court allowed New York City to enjoin my trial and stop the trial that was in progress. Unbelievable. So I've had a lot of experience in that area that you're talking about. But what you have is an issue of if I'm appointed, as I'm hopefully going to be appointed on Friday, I will not have the independence to be able to do the things that could be done if I had been elected. If I'm elected, I become the counterpoint to the elected prosecutor, and I can accomplish exactly and should accomplish exactly what you're thinking about. But if I'm appointed by the political leadership, I really have to work within their requirements. And I think, and I've made my decision that what I'm going to recommend on Friday is that since I'm going to be appointed and I can be thrown out at any time, that all I'm going to do is to be a revenue raiser for the town and let them decide how the money's to be spent. I'm not going to get involved in political issues because I don't have any independence. I could be fired, and I want to avoid that. I want to prove that the town attorney general is a money raiser, and I can do that without stepping on any toes because the town will have the ability to veto any litigation that I propose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would seem to me that if we started from the ground up and the local community was working, earning a living, contributing to the tax base, they wouldn't have to worry about raising money. But the idea is that it's diverted away from the town. It's taken out of town, even out of the country. And, of course, this is done quite secretly, although it's being exposed more and more. And one would hope that with the people actively participating in the process of the government and how the town is run, when it's dependent upon all the people that live in the town providing all the services, they shouldn't be victimized by the legal system, whether it's law enforcement acting as the enforcer for the banker, the judge. I view a judge purely as a banker today. I don't see him or her doing anything other than collecting money and deciding how much it's going to be.
You know, I had an interesting case in upstate New York about 10 years ago. I represented a pharmacist, and he was caught with speeding, and he was caught. They opened up his trunk and they found drugs in his trunk. Now, he had just closed his drugstore that he owned, two drugstores, and he had drugs in his trunk, but at the same time he also had stolen some drugs from the chain store that he worked for. So the policeman took him into custody, and they asked him where he got those drugs, and he said, in part, that I took them from my employer. So they said that if you sign this statement that you stole the drugs from your employer, we'll let you go and make sure you don't lose your job. So he signed a written statement that he stole the drugs from his employer, and at that point he was arrested, and I came into the case. I brought a countersuit against the town for speed trap, for a violation of all sorts of things. And after some litigation, the net effect was that we reached a deal. And the deal was that my pharmacist walked totally clean, even wiped out the ticket, has no record of any kind, and about 2 months later, the town announced that they fired the entire police department of 13 policemen, and they retained the services of the county police to supervise their town. They got rid of the whole police department because it was being run to raise money. Everything they did was designed to raise money. Everyone that smoked had to do work for the hospital for free when they smoked marijuana. The whole town was based upon fines, and they no longer could meet the costs of dealing with somebody like me, and I have antitrust and civil rights litigation of the highest order, and the cost of that is enough to break the town. I wasn't the only one suing them, by the way. So they saw that they had too much, they couldn't afford it, and they gave up totally, fired the entire police department. I met with the editor of the newspaper before all this happened, and the editor confided with me, to me, that they were all deathly afraid of the state trooper storm-type people, one person particularly that would drive around with his short blonde cropped hair, his blue eyes, and everyone was afraid of him. And he was caught doing something, fixing tickets or fixing the meter or something. And the attorney general was after him, and he fled the state. And I demanded that he show up at a hearing so that that guy could testify what he saw when he arrested my client. And, of course, since he had flown the coop, he couldn't come. And because he couldn't come, they had no case, and I won. But that's sort of an interesting story that I have, where a town tries to finance itself by all of these arrests, smoking marijuana, spitting on the sidewalk, speed traps, and everything else like that. But you can go in there and bankrupt the town with litigation.
Yeah, there are some towns in my area that exist primarily to write tickets on the local freeways.
Yeah.
That's their economy.
So if a person is appointed by that same town, he's not going to be able to change that. But if the town can be encouraged to provide competition between the prosecutor type and somebody who will help the people, you're going to have that competition result in the election of somebody who will have the tools to go up against the system that is oppressive like that. So that's the next stage of the town attorney general, to show that it works and to make it an elective position. But as it is now, there is not a single town attorney general anywhere in the world as far as I know. And I'm trying to become the first one on Friday.
Well, I wish you luck. That's pretty good news. I bet you're pretty excited about the possibility.
Well, they like the concept, and I just recognize that politically I have to do and I want to do what they want to do. I can't have the independence at this point. I've got to show that it works, that it raises money. I've got to go after the people that left the town in a lurch, got all the subsidies, and then suddenly found a better deal and sold the jobs to someone else.
Yeah, well, I know. As I mentioned to you the last show and privately, I know many towns that are suffering because of the history of the industrial corporations that were able to work out tax abatements over the first 10 to 20 years of their existence, and then as they made upgrades to their facilities, they always were able to finagle their way out of paying the taxes, and those towns were always dependent upon that money, and they orchestrated things like strikes and I saw a Ford Motor Company build a $100 million spray booth for an Ohio plant that was making the Econoline vans and the Thunderbirds. These were pretty big ticket items for the company, and they'd been doing this for years, from the time I was born, at least, or around that time, it seems like. And they just, 3 months after building this $100 million spray booth that was supposed to create all these thousands of jobs, they tore it down and sent it to four plants in four different states.
Because they got money there. They got money to make it profitable to move the jobs, to sell lives like that.
Yes. And so, the towns got shorted the anticipated tax revenues.
I've got a solution. This is an interesting solution. The solution, as I see it, from that tax angle, because this is what the problem is. Walmart goes into a town and says, look, we want to open up in your town, and you're going to get the tax revenues. So the town says, great, and here's the deal. And Walmart says, oh, no, if you insist upon that, we're going to go to the next town, and you're not going to get the revenues. So there's they force themselves on a town because of the arbitrariness of the tax revenues. So what I would like to do is to see regional agreements among the towns and counties to split the revenue according to a formula that will make it fair, probably based on credit card and debit card purchases with zip codes, to allocate the money so that you can say that the town no longer wants Walmart in the town. They would rather have it away, and because they're not going to lose their revenues. A revenue-sharing agreement is the way of coping with that pitch that if you don't put us in your town under these terms, we're going to go 10 miles away and you're not going to get a cent. Just have a regional or a state-imposed regional distribution according to credit card and the debit card purchases.
Yeah, and I would like to see those corporations, like Walmart, for example, pay for the infrastructure costs that are incurred. The building of the access roads and plumbing and lighting and, you know, all of that.
They demand that as a premium. They demand that that be done. Walmart externalizes its costs. Their workers, they tell, go get welfare hospitalization in the town. Just don't bother us with your welfare, with your health costs. You can just get it for free in the town. Oh, the town, well, the town's going to build the roads and do this and set up the electricity. The town may even pave our parking lot. So they externalize their costs. Walmart walks into a town and almost makes a profit from day one because they don't have any costs.
Mm-hmm.
They thrust their costs on anyone but themselves. Their workers are their main. They throw their costs on the workers. They give them less than they should be getting in a variety of ways. They throw it on the town. They throw it on their competitors who have to pay taxes in order to enjoy the benefit of a competitor coming in at a lower price and putting them out of business. What kind of nonsense is that? That's all over America. And a town attorney general can attack that and do something about it.
Yeah, I agree. Now, the big question then is eventually getting everybody in the political arena, and I understand that you're not doing this for political purposes, at least, initially. You're trying to strengthen the backbone of the community so that the community can become self-sustaining.
Right, and the politics will follow in whatever way they want. But if it works to make them a stronger community, it doesn't matter to me whether they're Republican or Democrat, because those two titles don't mean anything to me today.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever considered suggesting to a small town that, let's say, Walmart comes in and they want to start selling Chinese goods? And I don't care if they have American brand names on them. If they're manufactured in China, there should be some sort of a localized tariff on bringing Chinese items into the town.
I think that would be in violation of the Constitution to have an import tax levied by a municipality or a state. That would be an interstate commerce barrier. You might have disclosure, you might have other things, but I don't think you can levy an importation. You can't levy a tax to import goods into the town or the state. It's an interstate barrier. It's an interstate commerce problem. The feds can do that. But we have importation free. The goods can move around the country without having that be levied. But what I would like to do is to have a federal policy where the people who sell their goods made overseas into America help pay for the cost of maintaining the American infrastructure. They shouldn't be able to come in and skim the skim profits from America without paying the price that it takes to keep stores open where their goods are. They're not paying their fair share. We've allowed them to get away with murder by not forcing them to pay their fair share. I'm not sure exactly how it should be done, but we have to think of that, because what's happening is that goods that are made at a nickel per hour are coming in and wiping out the jobs in America. And yet they're being sold in stores where the goods aren't contributing to the maintenance of the store, to the personnel that work there.
Mm-hmm.
It just goes for the profitability of moving nickel per hour goods into a market that is used to $20 per hour goods. They're arbitraging that and stealing money from America, stealing jobs and wrecking the country, and we've got to stop that.
Yeah. Well, I'm just wondering, you figure if these companies are, you know, let's say we're just using the Walmart example. This could be
right,
any company.
There's 100 top retailers that are doing this.
Yes. I wonder even if these products that are coming over aren't even entering the country under some kind of a contract similar to, I'm searching for a word now and
dumping.
I'm not finding it.
Dumping. You're looking for the word dumping.
Well, there might be dumping, but let's say, for example, that if they can move 100 cartons or containers, 142-foot containers of a certain product, and this is on a sort of consignment. That's the word I was looking for.
Okay.
In other words, there's a holding company that has a flooring contract with them, so to speak. This is done in big business. For instance, not all car dealers own the cars that they have. They have so much time to pay for that. A bank has financed the purchase on the basis of 90 days or 120 days or 180 days. And if they don't sell that, they have to mark down the price. This is why you have these periodic sales,
right,
where they're about to incur the finance charges. How do we know that these products are outright owned? You know what I'm saying? And this will never be disclosed if you have a corrupt top of the government that's dictating what can and can't be discovered about this. I don't see why someone who didn't pay, and this is a possibility, I'm not saying it's so, but I have a hunch that's exactly what's going on, that many of these products aren't even paid for until they're actually sold.
Well, let's look at it another way, because possibly you have a manufacturer in China who has made the goods.
Mm-hmm.
And now, instead of selling it to an in-between, a middleman or a wholesaler or importer, if mm-hmm. the factory in China merely drops the goods on a ship and brings them into America, that's the same cost as a consignment, because there was only one cost, and that was the manufacturer.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't change the problem if you have the middleman on consignment or if you have the manufacturer bringing the goods in. The cost is the same. It was the manufacturing cost plus the transportation. So that it doesn't solve the problem to say that you can't have a middleman if he's on consignment.
Yeah.
Because the manufacturer will go direct and have the same effect as if of what you've just prohibited.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think we have to look at the entry of goods that are made with labor at prices at or on terms where they lock the young girls in their rooms. They can't leave, can't go to the bathroom, and give them a nickel an hour or so, something like that. I mean, we're back to barbaric labor conditions, and that is what the kind of goods that are being imported into the country, and they're getting top dollar. So that it's very profitable to run this kind of labor camp in a foreign country if there's no regulation. and it wrecks the American economy because we can't compete and pay people a legitimate wage here if the goods that we make are going to have to sell for three times the price that the imported goods would sell for at retail. So the major retailers have the ability to set up plants, and they do in the foreign countries, and they import the goods, and it puts us out of business here in America. We've got to stop that because we need to work in America. We need to work to pay rent, to buy food, to have vacations, to pay excessive gas prices and oil prices. We need jobs here. And we're not getting jobs. We're losing jobs so that my clads at least can have 800 billion hours of inventory per year of available time that's not being used and could be used profitably both by the purchaser of the time and the one that sells the time. Doing things, instead of getting a job, we can do things specifically that need to be done. And I think that's the new wave. It's got to be, because I don't know, the other system isn't working.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's based on you know, the transfer of physical property for physical wealth. And I guess, you know, rhetorically I'm asking these questions because I see the physical wealth being dispensed on our end, but I don't necessarily see it in between. It's happening somewhere, but are we paying more for something that's not even occurring is what I'm getting at.
Hey, here's one way of looking at it. You know,
yeah,
that as you know that as the economy goes up in the country, it's good for the country, right?
Well, they say that, yeah.
They say that, but it's wrong. It's not good.
Yeah.
Here's what happens, that when a corporation moves 10,000 jobs over to India, the cost of labor goes down significantly, maybe $100,000 a year per person. When you multiply that by 10,000, 100,000 a year per person, that's a huge amount of savings, bottom line, per year, which is reflected immediately in their financial statements, so that they have now an increase in profitability of a huge sum of money. When that's capitalized by the stock market goes up dramatically because of the movement of the jobs to another country, and we've lost the jobs here. So as the stock market goes up, the financial press, the main media say, hey, the economy's getting better. Look at the stock market. It's going up. And yet the people that lose their jobs don't believe that the market's going up. So that there really is an inverse order as a result, that when the market goes up, it means that we're hurting in America, unlike what it used to be when what was good for General Motors is good for the United States. That does not any longer apply because of the movement of jobs overseas.
Yeah, I agree. It's you know, the top 100 companies, maybe 50 companies, or maybe 500, you know, which
well,
is
they,
why
they keep
they've
getting less. They keep
yeah.
merging.
Yes.
We've got to stop mergers. We have to. I mean, that's but we don't, because the political leadership is paid to become a leadership by the people that are interested in the mergers, and we have to stop then. We've got to have a different way of financing campaigns. We've got to have the taxpayer finance the campaigns. And that would be a reform that I would like to bring into a town. And I'm trying to do it for New York City right now, to require to have New York City adopt a statute that would provide for taxpayer financing of anyone's run for office at different stages, and to give them enough money to be able to make a credible race, and to prohibit them from raising any money at all during the time they're using the public money.
Mm-hmm. Now, not that I really want to get into politics, but this is significant in a sense. We have never had anyone who has literally announced that they're going to run a political campaign on private donations. And I presume this could be, corporations or whatever way, you know, in other words, there's no accountability for where the money's coming from, is how I see it. If someone can be designated as a private donor, then the information is not intended to be shared with anyone, so there can be no auditing of the monies coming in, nor how the monies are spent. I'm sure you're familiar with Maureen Dowd from the New York Times.
Yes, of course, yeah.
Okay, she wrote a piece at the end of June. I think it was around June 29th, actually. And she's talking about the money that Barack Obama is raising on the Internet, $200 million, and they're tracing the money as coming from Saudi Arabia, Iran, all over the Middle East, and even China. Now, it doesn't seem to me that that's legal. I don't know. But here we have now, what do you call this? New World Order finance, campaign financing?
Yeah, yeah.
It's amazing the extent that these things go on. Wait till you hear what I have coming out in genealogical research on these people. This is mind-boggling, and I can't believe someone, I can't imagine that in a short time he raised $200 million on contributions that they're claiming are from $10 to $25. It's just not possible.
Yeah, I'm reading that in the article right now. We were told no proof offered that the Obama Internet contributions were from 10 to 25 or so.
Yes.
I'm reading the Maureen Dowd article.
Okay.
That would mean over 13 million individuals made contributions if the average was $15.
Yeah, I don't see that happening.
Processed? Yeah, that's interesting. The campaign financing laws do require the reporting of this, but there's little interest in trying to see if the reports are accurate or whether the contributions were truly made accurately.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one doesn't know.
Or legally, for that matter.
Or legally, yeah. I understand that Clinton's campaign, that is the Bill Clinton, received a lot of money from China or something,
mm-hmm.
or was that other candidates as well? I mean, who knows? But I just believe that, I mean, when major corporations make contributions, those major corporations aren't American. Their income, to a great extent, comes from other countries. They no longer have America's interests at heart. They want to tear us apart and have that immediate profitability for the present leadership of the corporation. It's that stock market that drives people to making an immediate profit instead of a long-run goal.
Mm-hmm.
The CEO feels unsafe unless he can show steady profits, so they do it in a variety of ways, but they sell out the interests of the corporation in doing so.
Well, I don't see Obama smart enough to figure this out for himself, and I know that someone else is running this for him, on his behalf, just to make him the puppet that he would be. and I hate to sound I could say negative about, you know, and what I anticipate the outcome of any of these candidates being, but they're not bringing forth anything substantial. I hear nothing like what you're talking about on this show.
If Obama wins, does he automatically have all these congressmen voting his way?
You're going to see
congressmen were paid already to vote some other way.
Yeah, you're going to see people struggling for power. You know, there's going to be a reordering of the pecking order, so to speak.
So isn't our job to try to make the top irrelevant and to try to make the bottom where we live and work, to try to maximize our opportunities there with the hope that it will be a a grassroots spreading throughout the country that can change things from the bottom up. I mean, I don't know what else to suggest.
Yeah. I'm just bringing this up because this is the issue on everyone's mind. And, I'm on your side. You know that.
I know. It's just we have to start in a community, and I'm hoping that this one community that I'm going to on Friday is going to start. But the town attorney general is part of this because you're going to enforce the rights of individuals, of mm-hmm. small businesses, of homeowners, of employees, and do it at government expense. Because we don't have the money to enforce our rights. We are paying taxes, and we've been thinking, hey, I thought the government was enforcing our rights. But we find out the government is not. They're selling out our rights.
Yes.
At
yes,
least
absolutely.
At the top.
Well, hopefully I'm going to have some good news for you pretty soon, within maybe the next couple of weeks. I've been talking to some people in my area about this, and you should see all the double takes I get. You know, the jaw drops for a second. You mean there's a solution? And so I have a few more people to talk to, but I'm hoping that I can put something together and try to coordinate something with you to make
terrific.
Some overtures.
Terrific.
They have nothing to lose by trying, and they have everything to gain if they do. How
absolutely.
I see it.
We need to start somewhere. And it all makes sense economically to take a town and try to bring up their income level, which can be done with MyClads. Using email, you can bring up their political level. Using the town attorney general, you can bring revenues immediately into the town. Needed mm-hmm. revenues, and reduce the cost of living for the people. Give them Medicare. You can do a lot of things locally. Tremendous things you can do. You can't. It's harder to do it at a huge city level where you have a million people or 8 million people. You can't raise that much in litigation. But in a town of 2,500 families, 5,000 families, 10,000 families, you can do something with that. You can really make a difference.
Well, we're out of time. This hour just flew by. This was kind of interesting, and we touched upon a few different areas. And, of course, I'd like to have you back on again if you would grace us with your legal wisdom and your experience.
Absolutely.
And I want to let the listening audience know that they can visit your website. This is just one of many websites you have. MyClads, that's spelled MyClads.com. That's short for My Classified Ads. And that's to get the ball rolling. I would say if you were to, in your area, tell 10 people you know about this website and sign up yourself and get them to sign up, you get the ball rolling pretty quickly.
And there's no fee. I mean, the whole thing is free. And it's designed to really jumpstart a community. And I want to go into a community and help jumpstart it by showing people what they can do with it, encouraging people to join up, encouraging the appointment of a town attorney general, encouraging people to get on an email list so that they can communicate with each other. We can make significant change, and for the better. We can really do, we can improve our lives. It's a group effort, and it's at the bottom instead of the top.
Mm-hmm. And this is something which is the nature of what we've been talking about throughout the whole show. It's something that we are really going to have to recognize that it is our responsibility to do something like this, because we're not going to get it from the top. And that's obvious by the story that I just brought up. When the campaign contributions are coming from outside the country, do you think they have our country's best interests at heart? I don't think so.
You're right.
I do not think so. And if that were 13 million individuals donating that money, I would say they're not from the United States. Very small numbers. if any at all, and probably for the wrong reasons. We're told that anyone can become president in the land of the free, and that is the first lie. So, and all the other lies trickle down from there. So, Carl, I want to thank you so much for being on Evident Footprints tonight.
You're welcome.
And I wish you luck with your meeting, and we'll get you on our schedule as soon as we possibly can fit you in. In the meantime, you take care.
Terrific, Don. Thank you very much.
And I look forward to our next chat, whether
Terrific.
It's on the air or off the air.
Terrific.
Okay, you have a good night.
Okay,
folks,
good night.
You,
right,
you have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com, and our special guest this evening, attorney Carl Pearson. And you can visit his website at myclads.com. That's myclads.com. Sign up and advertise yourself. You might be surprised. And join me tomorrow. I am actually doing two shows tomorrow, the TNT Hour at 1 p.m. Pacific Time. That's 4 Eastern. I'll be sharing some new news with you, and I say new news because most likely you won't have heard it on the mainstream. And then, of course, tomorrow evening's guest on Evident Footprints, Mr. Win Free. So I look forward to talking to you all twice tomorrow. And in the meantime, have a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.